Hi, I'm Tontek Celik, and I work at Microsoft and represent Microsoft and W3C. But my portion of this talk has absolutely nothing to do with my work.
I'm a board member of Social Text, head of international for Technorati, lead investor for Six Apart, and sort of founder of Joey to IRC channel, and I don't feel conflicted.
My name is Sam Ruby. I work for IBM, probably best known for my weblog and a wiki that I've got creating a standard called Atom.
And my name is Adam Weinroth. I'm the founder and president of Easy Journal. We're a weblogging platform, have about 90,000 registered users, and we're based here in Austin.
So I wanted to give a quick overview of ridiculously easy group forming. The internet enables a new kind of thing. It's a new kind of media that enables group forming. Let me back up for a sec here. If you're online, you can actually visit this URL right now and look at this page with me. There's a few links down here you can surf, and this is a wiki, so you can change it if you want. I won't reload the page until later, so you won't change my presentation. But so let me talk a little bit about what groups are first. A group we're defining loosely as a number of people that are in persistent communication with each other. By persistent, I mean that means that they do it a couple times, maybe, or they do it for a long time. It doesn't necessarily mean that it's persistent for years, but it's different from something where, like a TV broadcast, where there's not an interaction there and it's not persistent over time. A group of people might be defined by common interests. I've also, and that's a pretty common way to sort people into groups. Working with groups, I've noticed that you'll also find groups based on common temperaments, people that just like to hang out together. And that's as powerful as an issue to bring people together. So what we mean by group forming is that there's a way for the members themselves, or there's a way for the members of the pool of the audience to decide what to do together, to bring each other into a group by themselves without some kind of overarching central organization that needs to do that. Interesting things happen when that becomes ridiculously easy, so easy that you're not thinking about how to do it. You just do it, and it happens. A good example of that is you walked into this room, and now we're a group. So some common examples are a reply all function in email. When you send an email to a bunch of people and somebody says reply all of a sudden you've got a group that's talking about one thing over a couple messages. You might think more commonly of something like Yahoo Groups or even the social networking sites, Friendster, Orkut, LinkedIn. Those are certainly group forming networks. Or groups forming within a network. eBay auctions is a really interesting example of something that you might not think is a group, but it's a group that came around together out of common interest. I want to buy and sell this thing and need to get it done. So why is group forming interesting? There's a guy named David Reed, a real smart internet scientist, one of the people that helped invent the internet for real. And he said, you know, what the really interesting thing about the internet is that it allows people to organize themselves into groups. Other people ended up naming that Reed's Law, and he wrote down a formula for the value of that network, the ability to create groups over a network. You might know Metcalfe's Law. Bob Metcalfe was the one of the key guys that started Ethernet, and he's got a law named after him, Metcalfe's Law, that the value of a network is n squared, the number of connections that you can make across the network. David said, you know, when you're able to not just pair machines, pair connections, but you can actually set up groups of connections, then you end up with a power law that's different. It's not n squared. It's 2 to the n. That's actually a much faster growth curve. So even if there isn't a lot of value in any particular group, there are so many more possible groups that you can come to in a group forming network that there's an exceptional amount of value there. And so he saw this major change from, now we've got connectivity, we've got Metcalfe's law that says that we can make connections everywhere. On top of that, once we start organizing groups in all kinds of different ways, you end up with this is an explosion of option value. The couple links here I think are really useful, especially David Weinberger's interview where David Weinberger does a great job of making that simple. So that's kind of a rough overview. I thought maybe we could turn it over to somebody else and give some examples, some more more concrete examples of what's going on. Who wants to go first? We didn't really talk about that.
Go ahead.
How about
just going over?
Just going over.
How about you, Sam?
Me? Okay.
Yeah.
Put it on D. A very simple example of a group forming is something that many of you may have. I don't actually see a lot of it. ARC channels that are out here, South by Southwest, where some people may be heckling or recording, in Betsy's case, the conversations that are going on. It's that easy to create a group. I am probably best known in here by the weblog I create. It's called InterTwingly. If you happen to know of me at all, you probably do know of my weblog. I came in here and I met a number of people that I only knew through their weblogs, and we knew about each other that way, and that created a shared context, which made it easier for us to create groups. I posted here about David Shea coming up and meeting me and how we didn't know each other by name, but we actually did know his work. And I posted it here, and immediately thereafter, he posted on my weblog, so comments are a great way to cause groups to happen. And not just comments, if I scroll down a little more, I mean, another person contributed in, this was about the power outlet debacle that has been resolved. Then an excerpt, what I've got on my weblog software is things that will go out and see via the referral logs that, hey, somebody named Phil Rignato actually referenced my thing, and so I actively went out and pulled text from his weblog over to mine. Pulled the content of his stuff over onto my weblog, and so we actually create the connectivity that way. Trackback is the same basic thing. More actively, though, the piece of software there goes out and actually pushes the data towards you, another excerpt, etc. That was on a trivial matter, and I don't think this will have any rather long-lasting effects. It won't necessarily create a new group, but it actually shows how easy it is to create the links. The next thing I did was actually, I had a presentation yesterday on a panel, Wiki what, and I talked about some of the issues that came out there from the wiki, and immediately thereafter, authors of other wikis that were not part of the presentation said, yes, I understand, we've got similar problems. And we're actually talking about possibly creating a new standard, a wiki markup standard, a wiki interchange format that, again, it's posted and trackbacks, et cetera. This one's actually got more of a chance of actually becoming a long-lasting group. But it's that easy to cause those types of actions to happen because of the way people follow links. They actually, whether it's RSS feeds or they just basically see referrers, trackbacks, et cetera, this can get people together who didn't know about each other. I often find these links. I mean, the excerpts I said I did refer alongs. Another way I do it is automatically by going to Technorati, which can see who linked to me. So one of the key ways in which weblogs are changing things is it's not necessarily just a publish only. I mean, you get up and you publish and broadcast. But by being able to traverse the links backwards and seeing who links to you, that you can actually find interesting connections.
So let me kind of ask you about that real quick, Sam. So what you've got is blogs that where we're used to people pouring out their soul and talking about themselves. But so now we're actually getting to the point where the weblogs are talking to each other. Is that right?
The pingbacks, trackbacks are, yes.
And does a weblog author have to do anything special to let you know that he's talking about you? Or
it depends on the software. I actually go out of my way actively to pull the stuff in, so they don't have to do anything.
Okay.
All they have to do is have a link, and if either Technorati sees that, or at least one person clicks on that link, then I will see it from my referral log, or I'll see it by automatically pulling Technorati. And both are rather good sources of actually finding out if the link does exist.
So it's so ridiculously easy that the author doesn't even do anything.
Correct.
You do a little bit of work to kind of keep the thing together, but
yes,
you want to
just make a comment that ties into that, because I'm conflicted now because I do work with Technorati, but I have it set up so that every time I get a link from somebody, I get a message on my cell phone that tells me that I've somebody's linked to me, and it's about and it's approximately 7 or 8 minutes is about the cycle time to get a link to here, and I've got IRC and Instant Messenger on here. And one of the things that's really important about the difference between a weblog is that the speed has increased to almost the same speed or exceeding the response time of email. So one of the really important things that you think about now is that Usenet was, you used to get people who would write a lot, but generally it was kind of a couple messages a day. But now what's happened is that you're getting the speed of Instant Messenger on weblogs. And so if somebody links to you, you'll find people linking back to you within minutes. And what's interesting is that then you add that the mobile phone to it, and you add these chat rooms to it. And what happens is that suddenly this community that you have is online and active. So you have your buddy list. So all these will converge, your SMS, your buddy list, the pings from your weblogs, and IRC will all become one sort of big blob of stuff. And in the cell phone ethnographies, I mean, there's a term that a Japanese researcher has been using. It's called the full-time intimate community, which is in general averages about 4 or 5 people, which coincidentally coincides with the fact that most of the weblogs have only 4 or 5 links. And so there's a small group of 4 or 5 people that you generally know what they're doing. It's a state, so you know whether they're awake, where they are, they're generally available. But there's a sort of a group of people that you're always in touch with, and it's more about presence and less about content. And so this is kind of a tangent, but I think it's interesting to see that the acceleration of speed and makes these communities real time, which adds to the strength of the bonds.
And is that going to be more pervasive now that it's gone mobile like that? Or to put it another way, to my American eyes, or that sounds like a dream still. It sounds hard. It sounds like you've got all this stuff flying over the place.
I think America is the only place it's not happening. And I think that a lot of it has to do with, and Howard talks about this a lot, but I think Americans always think about cyberspace and real life as two different places. But in countries where you have mobility, the network is part of the real life. And so you're always texting and in touch. And your attention, the network attention, fades in and out of your real life. So if something important when I get my Technorati ping, I glance at it to see how many inbounds that blogger has, to see how much reputation it has, or if it's somebody that I know. If it's important, even during a conversation, I'll look at it, right? But it's very different than popping open your computer, turning it on, booting it, and diving into cyberspace. So all these connections with the mobility, and especially with location, it integrates into the real life. And that's a very different experience than sort of diving into cyberspace 2 hours a day or 5 hours a day.
So you've got this intimate thing going on. Do you see group forming going on too?
Yeah, so it's a different kind of group forming. My assertion would be that most of the stuff that you see on this chat channel, the content is just the carrier signal for people transmitting presence to each other. It's, if you look at it, it's good morning, I need a bath, I'm hungry, da 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 da. And the content of most SMS is just a carrier for people letting each other know what state they're in. And so one of the most important value propositions of this community is to be able to understand the state and the presence of the people around you. And again, this is a very different layer than the deliberative sort of blogs as media discussion that we often have. But a lot of the really simple group forming, and this is, I think, an important point, is that a lot of people collaborate for the sake of collaborating, not because there's a point, just because they're together. And I think that a lot of the tools, you forget, you sort of focus on the content, but really what the point is that you're in touch with a bunch of people and it feels good, you know.
Sounds great. Sam, did you have more I didn't mean to cut you off.
No, that was a good break point.
Adam, do you want to go next? Or?
Sure. I think I have a little bit different perspective. I have more of a kind of business and marketing background. And one of the things that I'd like to focus on in terms of the panel topic is the first part, which is the ridiculously easy part. That's it. And I think that in terms of can everyone hear me okay, by the way?
No, that's
okay. In terms of making things ridiculously easy, it's not just contained within the software or the platforms themselves. I think a lot of that extends out even into the messaging and the marketing. For example, if you're operating a weblog platform and you call it a weblog platform, part of the challenge with bringing in novices who really, really need for things to be super easy is explaining to them what a blog is, because maybe they haven't heard of it before. When AOL announced their AOL Journals product, they did that because there was a conceptual barrier to the term blog. So they called it a journal because they knew that everyone knew what that was. So I think that, you can take steps out of, the user experience on the software side, but you also have to take steps out and simplify things on the communication side of things and really making people aware of these technologies. That's that point.
Did you want to show Easy Journal real quick? Or?
Sure. And just in terms of making things simple, on Easy Journal we have things kind of contained a little bit separately. We're going to be opening up to the blogosphere a lot more over the next few months. But right now everything is pretty much self-contained within the Easy Journal network. As I said, we have about 90,000 registered users. One of the features that people like a lot is the ability to form what we call journal networks, which is basically kind of like blog rolling. So I'm going to show you an example real quick. One of the choices that I have here is to edit my journal network. And I'm going to add someone to it. I don't know if she's here, Anna Sisnet. I temporarily took her off of my journal network, but I'm going to add her back in just so you can see how easy it is. Her username is Mama Wire. And she's in. So she's now part of the group. And when I think of making things ridiculously easy, these are the kind of models that I really look towards. Did you have a question?
Yeah, I did. So you just added her as a group, and you're kind of the admin, aren't you?
Yes.
Yes.
Well, not to my group. This is my particular group that appears on my weblog. So if you go right here to my weblog, which is adamnation.org, and if I refresh this, I think I'm not getting a very good wireless signal right now. Anyways, you see Mama Wire's on there now. And so this is specific to my weblog. She would not be able to add herself to that. She could add me to hers. And then we have another thing on here called a network digest, which is essentially just a quick read of everyone who is in my network, and I'm also in their network. So there has to be a mutual agreement there. And it's done. This part is done automatically, so we don't have to invite each other onto this page. You know, all the data is there, and then the page just figures it out.
So I wonder, did you have one of the questions that we had talked about was what businesses will value out of group forming. I wonder if you had any thoughts on that.
I do. I think that especially with web blogging and a lot of the social software technologies that we're seeing, one of the biggest, most compelling factors are the network effects. You mentioned Metcalfe's law, and it's actually not n squared, it's n times n minus 1. But
Reed's law is similar to
right.
n minus 1.
It comes out to be roughly the same. But what that basically says is that the value of the network is proportional to the number of members. And so that's why you have an ISP like AOL that's so powerful, because they have all of their members that are very tightly interconnected with other people. So there's some barriers to exit. There's switching costs there. If you leave AOL, then you're going to be leaving a lot of your friends and family behind, maybe. And so in terms of placing a value, I think it can be useful for generating revenue directly, but I think it's even better for other critical business drivers, things like retention, things like user activity that you know, kind of roll up into revenue and into sustainable revenue models.
Cool.
I've got another business perspective. I mean, my boss has actually asked me quite frequently, I mean, what's the business value of this? And my response usually is along the lines of, what's the business value of instant messaging? You don't necessarily, I mean, you can perhaps make a business off of the tools and whatever, but by and large, the real value is the connections. The real value is during a teleconference, you're actually multitasking and talking to somebody else while you're going on. I can do research just by simply putting something on my weblog, pointing to a few people, and they will point back, and they will contribute back. So it's the ability to gather research and to connect to people is the great value, to me, more so than the tools themselves.
How does that get to the bottom line? What does your manager say after that?
There's no cohesive answer to that. Basically, they see it as being important. They do see it as something that that needs further investigation and research. But it's
so. Do they value having people know more or be able to do their jobs better, faster?
Yes, I mean I'm talking both within IBM and at conferences like this about these technologies and whatever. It is something that they're investing in since they pay me my salary.
Cool. Dante.
Well, let's see. Excuse me, my voice has been recovering for a few days now, and this is about as good as it's going to get. Go ahead. Yeah, switch. I don't have much to add in terms of a business model perspective because I'm going to talk a little bit about something that a few of us did purely for fun. And we're trying to, you know, it's kind of an experiment, it's kind of for fun. But I want to take a step back first. We've talked a lot about group forming. I want to talk a little bit about the first part of that, which is ridiculously easy. And why does easy matter? I think, you know, this panel is titled Ridiculously Easy Group Forming for a reason. And I just want to go over a couple of the reasons. Easy means, like I said, more people can do it. When you make something easy to use, like a tool, or more usable, it's more accessible, more people can do it. This has fundamentally good effects. It's more democratic. Easy means that you make things simple. The simpler that you make things, the quicker that people write tools for them. And in fact, the more tools get written for them, even faster. The bottom line is, easy is for the rest of us. And that's a slogan that Apple really sort of pioneered, right? The machine, the rest of us. And it's not just about machines. It's about anything. Technology, protocols, formats, whatever. You do something that's simpler, it gets adopted quicker. And this is, you know, anyone that's worked with any standards bodies knows this by heart. The more complex the standard, the longer it takes to get the tools. In fact, some of them we're still waiting. So how do you do easy? You keep things simple. You start ridiculously simple. And you start to the point where, like, okay, is this going to be so simple it's going to be useless? That's probably a good place to start. Because oftentimes you find out that if you build too much in from the beginning, it never gets done, or it's too complicated, or whatever. Focus on solving one problem. And this is sort of the famous quote, small pieces loosely joined. We've got the web now. We don't have to have every one person try to go out and solve everybody's problem. Just pick a piece of the problem you want to solve, and solve that piece, and post it, and distribute it. And if it works together with other pieces, then guess what? The people will likely adopt it. Whereas if you try to do it all yourself and try to, like, get people into this one little site that does everything for you, then it's not something that necessarily will work with other tools. So getting a little bit back to the group forming, a lot of people have already observed that blogs and blog roles are sort of naturally forming groups already. Blogs are the fastest growing part of the web. A lot of you may have gone to the Break Bread with Brad dinner the first night and gotten one of these "Hello, my URL is" name tags. This is not new. This has been going on for several years now. And there's a big segment of the community that understands that, you know what? Well, my URL is my identity. And we're linking to each other as our URLs. So one of the logical next steps to this that people are already linking to each other is to add just a little bit of relationship information. And that's kind of what I'm going to talk about. So at the beginning, Pete kind of joked about how ridiculously easy group forming. Hey, we're here, right? So we just formed a group. Now, that's not as silly as it sounds, because the group of folks that worked on this thing called XFN actually formed at South by Southwest last year at a session. And it was a group forming literally that happened because of a session. So what is XFN? XHTML Friends Network, the idea is this simple. Everyone that blogs understands and knows about hyperlinks, linking to people with URLs. It's simply a way to say, all right, I'm going to add a little bit of information here that says, you know what, this person's my friend, or whatever. And the good thing is this is valid XHTML, because XHTML allows an HTML, for that matter, anyone to extend the rel attribute. So like I said, this group formed at South by Southwest 2003, really. And one of the key pieces of inspiration of this was during one of the panels, Q&A, John Alcyon Stinn asked, I want some way to know if someone has actually met someone else online. So when I'm linking to someone, how can I find that out? And we're like, you know what? That's a really good problem to solve. So that inspired the XFN met value. So this is somewhat similar to, you know, talk about Reed's Law, 2 to the n power, different possibilities. Well, relationships are kind of like that too. You have lots of different axes. You may have met someone. You may be friends or acquaintances with them. You may be coworkers, or you may have familial relationships or romantic relationships. And these aren't all independent. Like, you can't just say, oh, which one of these 20 things is your relationship? There is no list of 20 things. But there is a combination of things you can sort of put together to say that's my relationship. And that's basically what XFN is. So the story is, that we released the first version 3 months ago exactly. Just three of us that met at South by Southwest last year, previewed by a few more folks, and threw it all out there Creative Commons style. You know, as Corey would say, if you want your stuff backed up, you know, just put it out there Creative Commons and someone will back it up. The point is it's easy. It's easy to type by hand. It's got a very simple set of values. And in fact, I'll just bring this up really quick for you so you can take a quick look. And I'll just talk about the different axes, whether the friendship, your physical, professional, geographical, family, and romantic. And the idea is you see the values, they're easy to type. You view other people's blogs that are using these values, and you say, oh, I can view the source, I can just copy and paste it, I understand it. It's another good aspect of something that's easy. Can you learn from others that are using it? And to start this off, Matthew Mullenweg actually wrote an open source XFN Creator UI, which lets you, instead of having to type the source, you can basically click on radio buttons and checkboxes, and it does it all for you. So what's happened in 3 months? There's already hundreds of users using this. There's thousands of nodes in this sort of grounds-up, bottom-up, you know, social network. Numerous tools have added support for this technology. This is part of what I was talking about, how you make something simple, ridiculously simple, and you'll get the tools really quickly. There are blogging tools that do this. There are blog rolling tools that do this as well. For example, blo.gs now has support for XFN. Let's see if this will even load. Oh, there we go. And if you go to their site, they talk about it in their new site. It's like the latest new feature that they added. The interesting thing is, if you go to, it was suggested by one person, and it was so trivially easy to do because, take a look at the screenshot of their interface down here, and that looks oddly familiar to the XFN creator. So that's another aspect. You make something simple. You code a few simple examples. You release it out there as open source, and you know what? People will adopt it. Let's see. So the next steps. We started ridiculously simple, almost too simple for a bunch of folks. So there's been a lot of feedback, a lot of suggestions. We're adding a few new values. If you're interested, go ahead and join the community feedback loop. Try it out. Send feedback. Post about it. And this whole presentation, all these links are all online. In fact, I'm actually demoing straight from the web right now. I mean, presenting straight from the web right now. And I think that's about it.
Okay, let me ask you a couple questions. So if I get it, not only can I link to somebody, but I can say why I'm linking to them, basically?
You can say...
Or what they mean to me when I
right.
link to them?
So say, like, in your blog role, you have a list of people that you read, or a list of your friends, because you're reading what your friends are writing about, and you want to make that distinction. You can now easily do that. And, in fact, with CSS2 attribute selectors, you can make your blog role look different depending on your relationship to the people in your blog role.
And I've been hearing about FOF for a couple of years. FOF was going to do this for us, wasn't it?
It was, in some ways. FOF was more trying to document just the fact that you're linking to someone, like knows versus not. And then it was documenting, like, what are your hobbies and interests and things like that. It was more about the person rather than the relationships, whereas XFN focuses purely on the relationships. So we've looked at possibly creating, like, you know, some XFN RDF schema so that you can add XFN to FOF, and that would be a logical next step for people that are using it.
So,
but the beauty is XFN, right out of the box, anyone that knows HTML or XHTML can just drop it in. It works with the stuff that you already understand and know. You don't have to learn any new languages or tools.
Yeah,
so I want to ask a quick question. How many people here are actually already using XFN? Wow.
I want to ask a question. How many people would be intimidated by typing rel equals met into a HTML link? How many people think that's ridiculously easy, I guess?
I would be intimidated by that, cool, by doing it, but I wouldn't be intimidated by incorporating it into the Easy Journal platform, because I think that that could be a really big benefit for kind of describing what those relationships are within the journal networks that we have set up.
And to be fair, I mean, a lot of this stuff is nothing new. This is just taking a bunch of ideas a lot of people have had and sort of putting into one place. For a long time, if you've noticed on blog rolls, people put little asterisks next to the people they've met, right? Well, bloggers already are demonstrating they want to do this. So this is just another way of doing what they already want to do. It's a natural outgrowth of current behaviors. Yeah, go ahead.
First, there's like the political issues. It's like inviting someone to a wedding, right? Like, maybe you don't want somebody to know that you think of them just as an acquaintance when they think of them as a friend.
Huh. Right, the asymmetry problem. So the question was, it's kind of like the problem of inviting people to a wedding, and you don't necessarily want to state explicitly that, hey, this person is my acquaintance, when they might think that you're their friend. And that's, you know what, you're right. And that's actually, that's the reality of, like, actual human relationships. And as we blog and as we put more of our lives online, there's more and more of these sort of socially awkward things we're going to have to encounter and understand how to deal with and incorporate into the technologies. With XFN, we're admitting, hey, you know what, it's not just about ORCID, are you my friend, yes or no, right? It's about reflecting the fact that relationships are asymmetrical. And maybe you'd like to know, hey, I consider this person a friend. They only consider me an acquaintance? Okay, that's good to know. Or maybe you look at it as a compliment that, you know, you say, okay, I'll put down this person as an acquaintance, and they put me down as a friend. Oh, wow, I'd like to be their friend, so I'll change that. So it can go either way. It totally depends on your perception.
A follow-up question that's actually related to what you just said.
Okay.
Which is the changing part. The nature of relationships is very dynamic.
Absolutely.
It changes a lot. And the way it's structured right now doesn't seem very conducive to that.
So there's a couple of different aspects to that. One is that you really need to, if you want to sort of like deal with the whole update problem, right? Your relationship changes. You've met a whole bunch of people at South by Southwest, and now you have to go update every link to them to say that you've met them. Well, that's not completely true. Most people have their blog role in one place, either one file or one service or whatever. If you just update your blog role one place, then that solves that aspect of it. There's that. On the other hand, maybe you want to reflect the fact that your relationship has changed. Maybe you've been reading someone for a while. Maybe you've been emailing with someone for a while, so you really consider them a friend, even though you've never met in real life. So you've been linking them with rel equals friend for a while in your blog posts. Well, after South by Southwest, maybe you met them, and you put up a new blog post saying rel equals met friend. Now, all of a sudden, you've got the temporal axis of a blog that captures time-based information. You've got XFN that captures your relationship information. You mix the two, and you can actually keep track of change of relationships over time.
It kind of begs the question, is there an enemy subtype for that?
That's a great question. So I'm actually really glad you asked that, because that goes into a little bit about some of the design principles that we had behind XFN, which is that we decided that to deliberately socially engineer it to leave out all negative relationships. And the reason behind that, let's see, here we go. Come on. Can everyone read that, or should I grow this? How about that? Bigger? It's my browser. I should be able to do that, right? So there's no denying that, that negative relationships do exist. But the question you have to ask is that actually a fun thing to do, to document negative relationships on your blogs and on the web? We didn't think so. So we deliberately social engineered it so that there was no negative relationship types. Now, of course, you can, you know, if you, it's one of those things where if you don't have anything nice to say, don't say anything at all. So you could say, oh, yeah, I just met this person. That might mean you don't know them at all, really, you just met them. Or it might mean you met them and you don't like them at all. We leave that deliberately ambiguous. Now, but that of course begs the next question, which is, couldn't someone else also add their own, make their own, you know, XHTML enemies network or something with their own set of values? They absolutely could. So in some ways, we sort of opened a Pandora's box here, and that here's a good example. Somebody could come out with a bad example. Well, I guess part of that comes down to the fact of, you know, do you have more faith in people on the web doing good things or doing bad things? We think the good will win out, and we think examples like wikis and other places on the web that are like nice and open, where the good has been winning out, demonstrate that that's true.
Actually, there's a research by a Japanese professor named Professor Yamagishi, and he does three different types of markets. It's a game theory: positive reputation tracking, negative reputation tracking, and where you can change accounts. And the negative reputation, the quality is high at the beginning because everybody's afraid, but then they soon realize that they can dump their IDs as they get bad reputation, so the quality goes down. Whereas good reputation starts fairly low because no one has any reputation, but as the reputation builds up, it increases. And the completely closed market where you can't run away versus a positive reputation where you can run away become nearly equal after a certain period of time. And so basically the notion is that positive reputation tracking is as good as a closed system long term. There's some data behind that.
We didn't even know that.
It's like raising kids, too. Like, you know, if negative feedback works at the beginning but sort of deteriorates in value, whereas positive reinforcement is better long term.
I wonder if there are other social – maybe I can ask the panel other bad social effects, spamming, maybe people that want to say that I want to be in your group but you don't want them in your group, or how do we make sure that we don't end up with a digital divide so that there, you know, a bunch of people are group forming and a bunch of people aren't group forming.
One of you guys want to go first?
Spamming has been a little bit of a problem. It's starting to be a growing problem in comments, and it's occasionally a problem in wikis. Wikis are self-healing, though, with enough eyes and just simple one click away from reverting. It's often harder to create spam than it is to remove it. It's not a long-term problem that I've seen, at least in wikis. Comment spamming is becoming more and more of an issue because the comment spammers are becoming more and more smart. They put in things that look relevant, and they point to sites that on the facade are weblogs. But underneath, if you view a source, you find that inside of that thing you pointed to are links to sites that you would not want to be linking to. So, I'm not certain if I've answered the question or I've missed everybody by not talking into the mic.
Any other negative social things that we can foresee or prevent? Or
I think that you know, the other danger area, not just in terms of the content, but in terms of the ID. So people being able to actually, you know, create these registered user accounts, and you've seen, you know, web mail providers really try and, you know, just relentlessly block this stuff out, whatever means necessary. Yahoo, Hotmail, they're, you know, the CAPTCHA images that are now required, and, you know, even causing problems for some people, like if you're blind and can't see the CAPTCHA image. So it's becoming more complex, but I think that eventually, when Sam and I were talking before, he mentioned the idea of self-policing. And by making groups so easy that, you know, intelligent people can join and be there all the time, or at least some people can be there some of the time, then you kind of have this round-the-clock human monitoring system that's at play. I think that can help a whole lot.
And how about social customs or social norms around friends and acquaintance relationships? How long is that going to take to get to the point where it's not uncomfortable anymore?
phrase that?
Question. Well, everybody's kind of got a. Everybody knows the social conventions of being in a room together. For instance, we don't really understand how to do that on the web yet, and
do we even
different
understand?
People different people take that up in different ways. And
well, can I have an opinion?
Go for it.
Which is that, in a way, so I'd like to see how well XFN works, because in my chat channel, we have cliches that are evolving continuously. We have a bot that anybody can write functions to, and it's much more subtle than any of these social network tools, because we have certain words and certain timing and the way that things happen that have a lot of cues that we normally associate with real life that we've developed just sort of organically, and they're not codified, and they change. And that's why I think that the interactions that I see on IRC are much more normal than the interactions I see on Orkut or on other types of codified behavior systems. And so, and I would assert that each IRC channel and even each time zone has a different modality, because in our IRC channel, we have the European time zone, you know, and then the Europeans get drunk, and then these other guys wake up, and then we've got the South Africans coming in, and each one has a different set of social sort of styles. And so, and each group is different. Right, and so I kind of think that some of these, again, very simple things that leave a lot more flexibility in terms of, you know, the way people use it, are more rich than the codified stuff. Now, they're less scalable, but maybe
that matches an experience I've had. I'm a member of a mailing list that's about 15 years old. It's on a particular topic, the English language, and we never talk about the English language. It's just a bunch of people that like to hang out together. And one of the things I've noticed, I've been there about 7 years, that there's a definite sense of place there. It's a place where everyone knows your name and like that. But its membership is kind of continuously evolving and things like that. And what I've found happens is new people start to learn the customs of the folks that have been around there longer, and you tell stories about tales and legends of, you know, the giant, when giants walk the list and things like that. And the list kind of tells itself. It seems like there's an organism that's separate from all the people that is the collection of all the stories that have been told and retold about the list. And it's something that, even though the people changed, the list continually retells itself what's going on and who it is and what it is. So it reminds me very much of that Joe Ito channel and the way that kind of evolves.
Lists themselves, as you said, have personalities. The Atom standard that I'm working on, we do the stuff partially on weblogs, partially on wiki, partially on mailing lists. Each one has a different personality. It's literally the place itself has a different personality. The mailing list tends to be dominated by people that are not shy, like to talk. You can almost think of it as the typical alpha male. That's where you find the alpha males come out and roam, is mailing lists. There are many people, and that's not totally a gender comment, though it is almost exclusively male. There is many people who want to contribute but feel more comfortable doing it in the safety and security of their own weblog. The wiki intimidates some and enables others. It just is a different feeling and different personality. Each one brings out a different group. I don't know if the combination of three brings out everybody necessary, but it gives more people an opportunity to participate.
In terms of the social norms, I mean, I don't even think we're near there yet, even with email.
I completely agree with that. Yeah,
my own use of email has changed over the last however many years. You know, I think even just a few years ago, probably not many of us, I know I didn't use IM for work, but now I use it all the time for work. And so I think we're just at the beginning of even starting to see some patterns with that we can actually make some generalizations about. And I agree with what Joy said, and especially with what Sam said about specific groups having their own personalities. I mean, that's just basic organizational behavior. That's why companies and teams of people have their own corporate cultures. And I think we're going to continue to see that even more on the web.
I think, like you said, it's not just the web. It's the social norms with all of these online electronic tools are all in flux right now. Email, instant messaging, SMS, IRC, weblogs, comments, we're all still figuring it out. And to some extent, that's part of the whole experience is we're getting – every little group gets to define it in their own little way. You go into 10 different IRC channels, odds are, you know, you might see a few that are similar, but you're going to find very different social norms in the different IRC channels. You go into Joyito, and something called Jibot says, oh, hello, so-and-so, you know, I've never heard of you, or tell us something about yourself. And your first impression is, what's this? Who is this Jibot person, and why are they asking me something? It's interesting because it just sets a different tone for the channel, and we aren't done figuring these things out. It's sort of in a hyper-evolutionary phase, just like the way high school kids picked up pagers and cell phones and IM before sort of like the rest of the world. You know, there are different market segments, different demographics that are evolving faster than others. It's a wildly interesting thing to study if you're interested in that kind of stuff.
So maybe this is a good time to take questions. Chris? Did everybody hear that? And another way we can toss in there is vote links, too.
That's what he's talking about.
Oh, okay.
Right? The technorati, vote for, vote against, vote abstain? Yeah.
Okay. That's your question. Yeah.
Okay. So the point is that you're right. The rel attribute can be used for lots of different things. Probably before today, a lot of folks would have said, well, I've seen link rel equals style sheet a lot. And that's probably the most commonly used rel attribute that's like on the web today, saying, hey, here's this link to this other document that is a style sheet for this document. And that's really what, you know, that functionality is. The rel attribute isn't just about linking to documents or people. It's also you can link to specific posts. You can in your hyperlinks, people have been using rel equals bookmark to say, hey, guess what? This is a permalink in my blog. And now you can discover the permalinks and spider them and do all that simply using the XHTML. Vote links are like a next step on top of that. This is a problem that Kevin Marks wanted to try and solve because if you link to something, you sort of raise its woofy, its sort of ranking in Google, and you may be wanting to link to something but want to criticize it. And so this is a very simple proposal, again, sort of ridiculously simple. Start ridiculously simple and see where you go. Is to say, well, what happens if you just pick three values that are vote for, vote against, and vote abstain, and just let people link to either other posts or other sites and say, okay, I'm saying something positive about this, or I'm saying something negative about this, or I'm explicitly being neutral about this. And I think the Technorati guys are actually spidering this right now. We'll have to see what comes out of it. But there's a difference between hyperlink to a particular post in, you know, deep into the archives of some weblog, and hyperlinking to, say, a site that represents a person. So you can usually figure that out by the context.
So that doesn't quite answer it for me. So some people are going to get it wrong. They're going to vote for a person, and they're
sure,
going to think they're using XFN. Is that going to cause some kind of collision or problem?
We'll have to see. I mean, so far we haven't seen it. But like many other sort of ridiculously easy technologies, you're going to get people experimenting with it. And I would say that's more of a positive than a negative, because oftentimes the best uses of technologies are ones the creators never thought of. So we're not sure for the moment. We'll have to see how people mix and match these things.
You just do it.
So in the rel attribute, everything is space separated. So you can say, you know, friend space met space colleague, etc. And all those values apply. It's right.
And by the way, what does rel mean? Does anybody?
Relationship. And there's also rev for reverse, et cetera. There's a few tags on this. But I think the key point here is that neither of these things were over-designed. Yes, there may be collisions in the future, and then if you really thought about it, you'd end up designing something like RDF. Neither of these guys wanted to do that. So they designed something that probably won't have a collision, and if there is one, they probably will work together and work it out.
Do we have to worry about 1,000 of these namespaces?
Well, I want to first comment on the last thing that Sam said. That's a really important point. If there probably is a collision, you know, it's not like we're working as little missile silos where we never talk to each other, right? This is the web, folks. This is 2004. We're online, you know, way too many hours per day, and it's not like we don't know about these things happening. So if there's a collision, that's exactly right. People will work it out.
Find it by Google searches or whatever else, connect to one another, and a group will form.
I think there's also kind of a de facto standard that ends up working itself out. So if you've got competing standards, it works out.
Well, I think you're absolutely right, and that's one of the let's see here. I think I got this in the next one. One of the things that people asked for, they wanted to say rel equals contact. To just say, you know what, I don't want to put this person down as an acquaintance, even because even that's too familiar to me. This person's just a contact, and that's one of the things we're adding there. In terms of applying XFN to other solutions like a contact management system, I think that makes a lot of sense. We designed it really to work well and to adopt what people are already doing with blogs and blog roles. And to try and simply solve that piece of the problem, somebody could easily come up with, to say, a set of relationship values that would document, say, organizational relationships, you know, employee-manager relationships. But from our perspective, is that something that you'd really want to publish on your blog on the web? Probably not. So we left that kind of thing out. But certainly that wouldn't stop someone from extending the standard, from adding their own module, adding their own, you know, XHTML workers network or whatever module, and then using them together. One of the things we found is that we looked at a lot of different our sort of previewers were from a numerous different backgrounds and cultures. So we made sure to preview the set of values and sort of vetted it that way in terms of things that were and were not compatible. Lots of different cultures have different terms for different things, and there's different, you know, you can have, this is my aunt's uncle's cousin's sibling that I'm good friends with. Maybe that has a special word, you know, in a particular language. The point of XFN is, like, we're trying to pick the 80% that goes across cultures, that's, like, more universal, that seems to work pretty well. You could spend your entire, like, academic life trying to document the different relationship patterns between different cultures. It's an incredible field. You can do direct connections that way, but if you just look at languages, there are many more than 8 terms for relationships. That's the point I was making.
Right, but I mean, in the sense you can describe every kind of, there's a mapping of every, if you take those 8 terms, you know, I think it's brother, sister, mother, father, wife, husband, wife, and there are 2 others.
That's probably both gender variations of child, parent, sibling, and spouse. And you're right. You know, if you're an ethnologist or if you're into keeping track of your family tree, and if that's your hobby, then those are the only values you really need.
And another question back there.
Rel equals, and they're getting hung up on the equals sign. So when, if I'm going to build a tool because you've got six, you know, however many values there, it's a contained. It's not an equals. So it could also contain votes for, votes against. I'm probably going to ignore it because that's not part of the spec that I'm looking for.
That makes sense.
Yep. So anyone got any questions about some of the other things we're going to talk about?
Now I do have a question. This has mostly been about like naturally forming groups where, like Sam, people came to Sam because, you know, they were interested in it. I have a problem where I have a forced group, people that are, you know, like the work thing where we're stuck together. How do you get that same... What I was hoping for is the, how do you generate that? What kind of rules and norms and tools do you set up to generate that working environment that works online? You have people all over the place, and you want to create some place where that kind of group can form naturally, but we are constrained.
Maybe I can show you real quick the social text wiki, because that's exactly what we do with it.
Force people to work together.
Yeah, force people to work together. Actually, what we do is we make it easier for people to work together. So in a company, a number of people will be signed up as social text members. And what I can do is say that I've got a new project or something that I need to work on across departments, either in the department or across departments. And I can just make a new group out of that. Usually, wikis have traditionally been kind of a one big thing where everybody lives, and it's been an interesting evolution. Kind of we've had for the past year and a half. We realized that what businesses need is a lot of compartmentalization. So we've focused most of our development energy not on how the wiki works, but on how the group forming works, and that you can have separate groups that can overlap. So a bunch of people will work together in one thing. We've got, here's our bugs list. This is a whole separate wiki just for bugs, for instance. Or the development tasks list is a whole other wiki. And if I want to, I can say that I need to do a new project, and all I need to do is create a new wiki here. I do that by naming it. Yeah, I'll do this down here. Click create. And then I can just invite people to it. I say I want Joey in here. And Adina, one of my coworkers. And then I've got a new workspace for a completely separate team, or it's composed of some of the same people, but it's a new team that maybe is pulling in Joey as an outside person and my coworker. And then I can just go visit that, and we've got a whole new space to start doing stuff in. And it's separated from other people, but it's easy. It's right next door to all my other groups, so it makes it easy.
And within 7 minutes, it'll be on Joey's cell phone.
Or less. Okay. Any other questions? I think we go to six, right?
We're in.
Six. Thanks, everybody. Thanks, panel.
Mathematics about positive versus negative computation systems. That's fascinating.
Yeah, I